Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
Hey, good morning and welcome to the Brown Briefly podcast and weekly radio show here on the Voice of Vachon. That was a voice of our illustrious founder, Brian Brown. Brown started the Brown Briefly and brought to it his outstanding... I'm trying to read here, and I don't have my glasses on, and that's the problem. I'm glad
you're not flying it out.
Yeah, I know, guys. You know what? It's funny. I'm looking at it with one eye, and that eye is not the good eye, so I'm having trouble. Anyway, Brian started the Brown Briefly, and of course, he brought his very high standards of talking about current events, and they're always laced with humor and empathy. And Brian's motto was, less is more, more or less. And, of course, he always brought us a lot more. All right, let me get around to introducing the Briefly panel this morning. We've got historian, professor, and slow... What was this? And down under aficionado. And that is, of course, Dr. Bruce Hallman. Good morning,
hey,
Bruce.
Good to be here.
Boy, I got all kinds of stuff going on this morning. Holy cow. And that's, who else do we have? Oh, yeah, we have our, no, we don't have today our fairy maven and part-time political, full-time executive director of the Vachon household. That is Miss Amy Dreyer. She had to be called away on a business meeting this morning. Our legal eagle, consensus builder, former Washington State Assistant Attorney General, and Fulbright scholar, Mr. Craig Bellis.
Good morning. I just wanted to clarify something. Normally, yes. you mentioned that I was a Pinkerton guard, which is the antithesis of Labor Day.
That is true.
I am also a proud card-carrying, truck-driving Teamster. So.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Mm-hmm. Well, I was a 20-year union guy myself. Well, yeah, 20 years. That's right. What are we else? Oh, yeah, we have. We have our defender of justice, mariner, cyclist, top secret engineer, Kevin Jones. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning. I'm glad to see it's morning because, you know, time is flying so fast. It's glad to see we're still in the AM part of the day today.
Flying. It is flying. I'm sitting here behind the big red switch at the Gene Bosch broadcast studio in downtown Vachon, and I am Truman O'Brien. And we have a couple of fabulous guests today. I'm very excited. We have Emily Burns. Are you ready? Waterfront Assistant Manager Program. No, Assistant. Waterfront Asset Management Program Manager.
Whew. Say that three times.
Yeah. I even practiced that, and I still blew it. I can't believe it.
But you got my name.
I did get your name right, of course. How could I miss? And with Emily is Nicole Fischetti. And all right, here's another one of these. Creative Director for the Waterfront Program Interpretive and Cultural Signage.
Good morning. It's a little more complicated.
I got it all, right?
But you got it all. Yes. Well done.
Boy. Hey, before we get going with our small talk segment, which we're going to be talking about the Seattle waterfront, which is so incredible, I can hardly wait. It's really fun. But before we do that, let's run around the table and find out what folks have been up to. Craig, how about you? Let's start with you.
Yeah, well, the two big events were the concert in the park with the Great Divide.
Oh, yeah.
The closing of the concerts in Ober Park for the summer, and it was quite the final act, bringing back the Great Divide. Wonderful, wonderful show. Some of the people sitting around the table were there as well.
Mm-hmm.
And the other was the next night at the Coop was one of Steve Amston's...
theme night, right?
Yeah, theme night. And it was songs backed up by the Wrecking Crew, the famous Wrecking Crew, who backed up hundreds and hundreds of songs and never got any credit for it. Mm-hmm. But now now they're finally getting the credit. There are a lot of great musicians that were part of the Wrecking Crew. And I sang a song to my wife from our wedding. I surprised her at our wedding 37 years ago this month, where Steve Amston actually was the singer at the time. And the song, it was the song we left. We walked back down the aisle to, and it was the Ronettes' Be My Baby.
Oh, fantastic.
That was fun.
Oh, that's great. And you sang it that...
I sang it at the Coop, yeah.
Oh, fun. That's
backed
fun.
Up by the Wrecking Crew Coop
band.
Which is a great band.
Group. Yeah. How about you, Bruce? What have you been up to?
Kind of a quiet weekend. You know, the Great Divide is just an incredible story on the island. And so, I mean, they started in the 70s and have been on the road for a while. And, you know, just a really interesting sort of Vashon group. But then this weekend was kind of a quiet weekend. It was the end of crab season. So after 2 months of crabbing every Sunday and Monday, you know, getting up at 0600
to go
set crab pots and then to go out in the afternoon and the next morning repeat. But it was a good crab season. We did it about a total of 106 good-sized Dungeness crab over 2 month period, which sounds like a lot until you divide it into how many
days you spent out there. So
five or six crabs.
And how many people are eating them?
Yeah, exactly. You know, they get distributed through the family and friends and neighbors and all that sort of stuff. But also, today is the first day of school on Vashon Island.
Yeah.
So our four-year-old grandson, August, is starting preschool. Not today. He'll start next week. But our second grader, Theodore, and our sixth grader starts at Murray Holden. So big day in that household this morning, getting those kids off to school.
Now, which one was the crab whisperer you posted?
That's Theodore, the 7-year-old. He is just fanatic about crabbing. I mean, he just loves it. He's the first one up in the morning. He's the first one on the boat, and he just sort of like, and you can see him. I mean, he weighs like 60 pounds, and he's trying to pull up these 40-50-pound crab pots, and he's sort of struggling away, but he just loves it.
That's great.
He's right at that age where it's just perfect.
That's great. Yeah. All right, Kevin, how about you?
Hey, I've been busy, jumping into the summer with both feet full on. So we went for two hikes over the last week up to Dingford Creek, up to Myrtle Lake in the Middle Fork Snoqualmie River Valley, and then yesterday, Mount Snoqualmie, Snoqualmie Mountain, actually. So if you go up to I-90 and take a left into Alpental Road, Snoqualmie Mountain is the most sort of prominent peak. But also was invited, and actually some people question maybe my sanity, but a bicycle ride up to Hurricane Ridge.
Oh, baby.
Yeah, which is pretty spectacular. And talk about a descent.
Wow. Yeah, I can think coming down would be a lot of fun, but going up... Not so much.
You know, they both have their attributes.
But, oh, boy.
But we've also been planning. Yeah. So there's two things coming up in the next two days. Tonight, 7 o'clock, at the Vashon United Methodist Church, Indivisible Vashon, we'll be gathering again to talk about noncompliance. What can we do? And if you're paying attention to the national news, show up and we'll talk about what we can do. Michael Tanaka from Representative Jayapal's staff will be there to answer questions about their perspective about what's going on. And not to be outdone, tomorrow night, a special meeting of the Vashon Mori Community Council at the Land Trust Building, 7 o'clock p.m. This is the 3rd of September, this coming Wednesday. We will be talking about our plans to improve the King County Strategic Climate Action Plan, which has all kinds of things from transportation to housing to ferries to... community solar, and all that stuff. So show up at the Land Trust Building. Check out the v-mcc.org website if you want more details under their events. But be there because it's a good conversation to be involved in. If you care about the climate, you want to be there on Tuesday.
Wednesday the 3rd. And this is the plan that the county's been working on for...
We've been involved for a year and a half multiple public meetings. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they released the plan now to the committee. the Environment Committee, and right. They're going to be looking at that on the 4th, actually.
Okay. So you need to get your input in.
We do. Then. Yeah, yeah. And Council Member Mosqueda has already heard from us and right. has actually taken action on a few of the things that we recommended. So we're feeling good about that.
Excellent. Yeah.
But there's more to be done. And we think that the Climate Action Plan should meet the goal of the community. And right now, when we read it, it doesn't quite get us there. So,
there you go.
You know, let's add a few more things in there to give us a chance to actually meet the aim of helping right. out the climate.
Outstanding. Emily, what have you been up to this week?
I also went to the Great Divide, and that was a fantastic experience.
Wasn't that a great concert?
Yeah. It was a very musical weekend. The night after, I miss the Coop. I keep missing the Coop. I need to put it on my calendar. But I went to see Cheap Scenery at the Sugar Shack, which was fantastic. One of my favorite bands on the island. And then on Saturday, we had the Snapdragon Red Dress Party.
Oh, yeah.
Which is quite a joy. And there were all these extra dresses. So one of my favorite things was seeing people come in and being able to size them up and go, yep, this is for you. This is for you. Yeah.
Yeah. Of course, you have an entire closet of red dresses probably at home.
I had to pick between three. But there were a lot that Adam and Megan provided. And then I got to play cribbage, which I love dearly. And then a dinner. And it was just a beautiful, beautiful weekend. Beautiful 3-day weekend.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Nicole, how about you? What have you been up to?
I actually also had a pretty quiet weekend. All the fruit is ripening on my property, so I made two kinds of jam and enjoyed the barbecue pop-up at Pop Pop. It was great.
Oh, you know, I've been wondering about that. It's a barbecue, that what they're doing? I mean, I see that monster thing they've got out there.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yep. The owner of the bakery brings the smoker out, and it was absolutely fantastic. Highly recommend.
Doggone it. You know, I started to go, and I thought, well, I don't know what it is, and okay, next time.
Well, you didn't want to feel out of place, is that?
Yeah, right. Well, my week was, on Thursday, we got our annual hay load in. Mm-hmm. And actually it's only part. We brought in 12 tons and we still need to bring in another couple.
That's a big truck of hay there, Truman.
It is a big truck of hay. And I have to tell you, I have really bad hay fever. I have allergies. And
I saw you at the Great Divide.
At the Great Divide.
Your eyes.
My eyes didn't look too good, did they? Man, I can always...
That's been happening to me, too. It's been going off the charts, and I don't know what I'm allergic
to. Oh, well... I know what I'm allergic to. If it's green, I'm allergic to it. You know, your green color, a truck goes by, my eyes start. No. But anyway, I can tell how good the hay is by how bad my eyes are still messed up. And this has been like, 4 days, 5 days ago? So it's really good hay this year, I have to say. Okay, hey, so today is a significant day. Today is Pierce Your Ears Day. I think I'm probably going to pass on that one myself. Anybody else going to go for it? No?
You can't be a real pirate
without a pierced ear. That's it. Come on, bro. And only one, right? Yeah. Today is Telephone Tuesday, and I have a little story about that I'll tell in just a minute. It's World Coconut Day. And you know, if you read about coconuts, they're pretty important for a number of cultures, you know, what they provide. It's National Spalding Baseball Day. And the last National Blueberry Popsicle Day. I've never had a blueberry popsicle in my life.
I've never even seen one.
I have not either. But it's got to be turn your mouth blue.
Exploring.
Right? Yeah.
There is no blue food, you know.
There's no blue food.
There's no natural blue food.
Except blueberries. They're blue.
They're not blue.
They're
purple. Take a close look.
Point made. Blue.
Yeah. Okay. Point
made. You got to remember, you're talking to an attorney.
I know. I was just thinking that. You know,
when we were on that hike up to Myrtle Lake, the reason that it took us like 4 hours to get up there, because the blueberries were amazing. And the thing about it, you pick blueberries, and you know, the blueberry juice, you know, it's hard to not get. And it looked like our hands. It looked like a horror show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Almost as bad as eating Cheetos.
Yeah. Oh. Well, my only blueberry story is that many years ago I was hauling fish up in Alaska, and we were in Wrangell Island, and we had to wait there. They were putting together a load of crab for us to haul out, And there was a huge, I mean, huge blueberry patch. And in the evening, we were picking blueberries on one side, and there were some big brown hairy folks on the other side picking berries on the other side. So we kind of kept our eyes open the whole time. Yeah. No, but I have to tell you about telephone very quickly. I've told this before, but when I was a kid, I mean, little kid in West Texas, we had a phone. How many of you have seen the Cyclone Line, the play that that Cat Eggleston wrote? Have you guys, you've all seen it?
I'm raising my hand.
Yeah, there you go. Well, in that she talks about the Cyclone Line is actually a telephone line, it's a party line that everybody's on. When I was a kid, we were on a party line. Our phone was a hand crank bell, and you would crank it. We did have a handset. It wasn't, you know, talk into the box thing. But you would crank that thing, and Mabel would answer, and you'd say, "Hey, Mabel, hook me up with the Thorntons, would you?" And then she would plug you in, and you'd get called. And we had a specific ring. It was like ring, ring, ring. That was our ring. Somebody else might have three rings. And if you were going to go on vacation or something, you'd call your neighbor and say, "Hey, would you take our calls for us?" And they would answer your calls. And, "Hey, the O'Briens are out of town, you know." But I'm serious. That's how old I am, I have to tell you.
Did you have dirt floors in that house?
We did not have dirt floors. We actually had a basement, which was very unusual in West Texas. But anyway, my cousin had an old phone, and I was going to turn it in to be sold. I got to looking at it, and I realized that was the phone that my family had.
The very phone.
Not that phone. But one exactly like it. But that one was painted black. Ours was natural wood. And there's a part where the paint is scraped off on this thing. It is oak, which is exactly like the phone that we had. So I can hardly wait to take all the paint off of this
thing. We have one, you know.
Do you have one like
that? In our kitchen, yeah. Oh, yeah. And every time my mom used to come up, she'd take the thing and she'd do ring her it. Ring.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. So now my mother's been gone for many years, but now I'll pick that occasionally up and lift up the earpiece and
listen
and go,
for your mom.
Mom, yeah, come on in, Mom.
Boy, listen, if she answers, you're in trouble. That's all.
No, that would be good.
It'd be good. All right. So, we got a couple of September 2nd birthdays, actually three of them. They're all actors. 1951, Mark Harmon from NCIS. In 1964, Keanu Reeves. And in 1966, Selma Hayek. So there you go. Some famous birthdays. Anybody else know anybody on second? No? No. Okay. Today in history, we have a couple of really interesting things. In 1666, it was the Great Fire of London. It began at 2 o'clock in the morning on Pudding Lane, and it burned for 4 days, destroying about 80% of London. And over 13,000 houses. So that, you know, all these old cities. In fact, Seattle. Seattle had that.
1889
had a big fire. It took about 60% of the town, right? So I find that really interesting. In 1944, speaking of fires, future U.S. President George H.W. Bush bailed out of a burning airplane during a mission in the Pacific. So that's kind of interesting. And exactly 1 year later on this date was VJ Day. That was the formal surrender of Japan. They signed the aboard the USS Missouri, which marked the end of World War II. And last, 1969, the first ATM, the first automatic teller machine in the United States was installed in Rockville Center, New York. How would we live without those silly things, huh? You know, before
now
we get...
we have Venmo.
But Venmo, yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, ATMs, yeah. Who needs an ATM, right? Well, we have to have one here on the island because our particular branch left and just left us with the ATM. Before we get into the our small talk segment, talking about the upcoming grand opening of the Waterfront Park in downtown Seattle, which is really exciting. It's going to be on the 6th
of September. Sixth. So this upcoming Saturday.
This Saturday.
From 11 until 7, or no, 11 to 9? Oh, shoot.
That's why we have notes.
That's right.
You don't want to roll up just as they're closing up the...
Well, before we get into that, Bruce, can you give us a... First of all, let me tell you, Bruce sent us this... Go ahead. Oh, no, she was about to say it. Bruce sent us this wonderful video that takes us back to early 1800s, I guess, or before.
Back to time immemorial.
Yeah.
So before European contact.
Yeah. And then it brings us all the way up until, well, until the kingdom, I think, really. But can you give us a brief, I mean, like real brief?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, sure. And Emily, Nicole, jump in here.
Okay.
Anything. Yeah. So downtown Seattle, particularly the waterfront, has really been a series of terraforming events, if you will, over the past, 100 and 200 years or so. But what's interesting to me and the Vashon connection is originally it was a sand spit and a small sort of connected island, if you will, right where the waterfront is today. And it was called the Little Crossing Over Place. So it was a native village. It was basically a gathering place for much of central Puget Sound. And the Vashon connection is Mary Bridges, who was a Schwababsh native person, who married Matthew Bridges, who was the first European settler on Vashon Island, was actually born there.
Oh.
She was born. Her family was there for a trading sort of session, and she was born in the summer during the middle of this trading session at the Little Crossing Over Place. They raised their family at Tahlequah. The Bridges James family is a very important family in both the Puyallup and the Nisqually tribes. Her grandson, Alvin Bridges, was arrested with Billy Franks in the Fish War. Mm. And so there's this sort of direct connection, if you will, between the Little Crossing Over Place, Vashon Island, the Bridges James family, the Fish Wars, and where we are today. So I think that's kind of an interesting little
tidbit there. I think it's
fascinating. Yeah. But the waterfront was transformed very quickly. 1850s, Yesler Mill and Yesler Wharf put in. In the 1860s, the lagoon was filled in, so it all becomes kind of dry land. 1884, they built a railroad trestle across the bay, if you will, the southern part of the bay. They loaded 500 tons of coal a day coming out of Newport and the mines over near Bellevue in that part of the state.
So I wasn't aware that we even had coal mines.
Oh, yeah. Big coal mines.
Big coal mines.
Black Diamond.
Black Diamond. Newport.
My great-grandmother, Noni Manalia, ran a 100-room boarding house in Black Diamond for the miners. Yeah, her cooking kept them all in line.
And a lot of that original fill was, from Yesler's...
I was going to ask.
The sawdust?
Well, yeah, the original lagoon was filled with sawdust, a lot of it. But then later on it was filled with what's the Denny Regrade, essentially. They took down one of the seven hills of Seattle to fill that in. So, and that largely occurs in the 1895, early 1902. They fill in that whole area that's now known as Soto, south of the Dome. Mm-hmm. 1905, it's interesting, we think of the waterfront as sort of a tourist area, but much of the late 19th and early 20th century, it's the railroad hub of Seattle. Oh. I mean, it's wharfs, it's railroad tracks, it's how freight comes in and out of Seattle. So it was a very industrial kind of thing. Smith Tower is built in 1914, tallest building west of the Mississippi River. In 1936, because of increasing traffic, they built the Alaskan Way, which was essentially a way to get around Seattle. So you didn't have to go through downtown Seattle on Highway 99. It sort of skirted the city. And that becomes the beginning of, after World War II, the building of the viaduct. And the viaduct is just a way to have a freeway skirt around Seattle. That's built in three phases between 1949 and 1953. Then by 1967, I-5 is built. So you've got two freeways sort of cutting off downtown from the First Hill area and from the waterfront. And that sort of decision to build the viaduct in the 1940s. That was going on all over the country. It's kind of the Robert Moses approach to urban development. You let transportation drive it, and it ignores all the aesthetics of a city connected to the water.
And it really cut off communities.
Oh, definitely.
Oh, yeah, separated.
Oh, yeah. I-5.
People lost their livelihoods.
Right. Yep. Right.
Because,
yep.
Because of
right.
I-5 coming, yep. particularly through. Through Chinatown.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. Yep, yeah, yeah. The building of roads, essentially, in the 1940s and 50s, it really destroyed sort of urban communities in many, many ways. And then, of course, the Nisqually earthquake in 2001 damages the viaduct, mm-hmm. and so they begin looking at alternatives. And that's when the plan in 2009, they develop a plan to put a tunnel underneath where the viaduct is, basically take the viaduct down. 2013 to 2017, they're digging the tunnel, which is another story in its own right. Lots of interesting things going on there. Bertha, sort of cutting under the city. But then in 2019, the tunnel opens. The viaduct is taken down basically within a year. Mm-hmm. Between January and November of 2019, the viaduct's taken down. And then what you have is this big open space, and that's really what we're here to talk about, is what has happened once the viaduct came down. So is that a fair sort of assessment?
Yeah, I think it's a fair assessment. And the one thing I want to do is the things that we're talking about, we can verbalize it, but I'd really encourage listeners to go out there if you're interested and do some of this research. And, we can try to provide the links. But one of the things that we're working on right now is going to be our interpretive signage, which talks about a lot of these stories. We're going to have this interactive story map that will help people to experience that, even if they don't get down to the waterfront right away. And the other thing I want to talk about is with our City of Seattle website, which is seattle.gov/waterfront, there is a lot of information about the projects and the history that we'll be talking about today.
All right.
Great.
So one of the things that fascinates me was you were talking about how it was a big commercial area, that current downtown. That is all moved to the south now, and that's where all of the cranes are and all of that. Is that correct?
Yeah, essentially the Port of Seattle. Once they bring in containerized freight in the 1960s and 1970s, it changes that whole dynamic of the waterfront.
Right.
I mean, Seattle was a union town, basically, in the first part of the 20th century. And one of the cores of that is the Longshoremen Union.
Right.
And because trains would pull up, and literally you'd have cranes picking stuff up and putting it on the ships or taking it off ships and putting it on
right
the rail
in that
cars.
Downtown area, right?
Containerized shipping changed all that. And to do that, they moved it down to what is now called Harbor Island.
Right.
So
That was actually all original tidelands that was also filled in by humans.
Yeah, right, right. That whole, the Soto and South there, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so when you look at the Seattle waterfront, it's very different than it was prior to European contact. Mm-hmm. They built seawalls along mm-hmm. there. And essentially, I like to call it terraforming.
It's really rebuilt
the earth to fit our needs.
Right. So, Emily, please give us, I used your job title and messed it up terribly. So tell us what your job is. What do you do?
My boss likes to say I'm the special projects person now because I get to do a lot of fun things. But essentially, asset management is what do we have? Where is it? What condition is it in? And this is one of the first times I've seen a major capital program like this. And mind you, with the seawall, we're talking about $1.2 billion.
Wow.
In capital improvements. Mm. Is the first time I've seen an asset management person put inside of a capital program. My previous role was with the Department of Transportation and Asset Management. So what do we have? Where is it? What condition is it in? What are the performance metrics? What is the level of service we expect things to provide to our public and our citizens? Mm-hmm. What are the risk? What are the embedded risks in having these things? Mm-hmm. Being able to do risk mitigation, being able to plan ahead of time. being able to tell that story through asset management plans. And so what I've been working on a lot is we have so many different partners. There's public and private partnerships, is trying to make sure that everybody knows what baton they're holding at what time.
Right.
Because we have programming. We have activation. The waterfront is absolutely alive.
That's just what I was going to say. The thing is just moving. I mean... Yeah.
Well, you had some practice with the West Seattle Bridge, didn't you?
another story. Yes. But this is a great example. One of the things, I do want to say one thing about the West Seattle Bridge is that I am so impressed with our engineers. They saw some changes in the West Seattle Bridge and how it was behaving. And this is why asset management and observation of our assets is so incredibly important. I truly believe that our engineers saved lives by closing down that structure when they did. And it was solely because they acted on what they observed and had at that point, I think, monthly or bi-monthly inspections.
Right. Yeah. That's fantastic.
Science works.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed. So, Nicole, your turn. Give us your spiel about your job.
Can do. So I am a creative director at a graphic design firm up on Capitol Hill. We're called Studio Matthews. We're a woman-owned small business, majority female workers. We all absolutely love collaborating with each other. We're a small team. We primarily work on design within built environments. So the waterfront project for us was perfect. Designing a little bit of wayfinding, but then really diving into the storytelling, the history of Seattle, how to connect the history to today and make sure that there was diverse representation, and figuring out with the landscape architects how to seamlessly integrate that into the new design. So if you do come to the opening or even just take a walk today, you will see at least the first stage of all of that storytelling installed. I didn't even really introduce myself. I jumped straight into the project. So I moved to Vashon 2.5 years ago. I moved to Seattle about 8 years ago, and I've been working on this waterfront project ever since.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, you know, I started as... We generally ask folks to introduce, give us a little bio. And I'm sorry I forgot to do that this morning because we just jumped right into this from the history.
Well, we have some really fun things to tell you.
I know. I can hardly wait. So, well, we'll just accept you that you are who you are. That's fine. That's fine. I'm glad to know that you're a Vashonite, though, mm-hmm. Nicole. I wasn't aware.
Absolutely love it here.
So, Emily, you were talking about transportation. What is the best way to access the waterfront? I mean, is there a way to get there by car or by walking, or what's the best?
I think it really depends on where you want to go.
Oh,
it's a 20-acre park, and this essentially starts from Belltown around Virginia and Pier 62, and goes down to the stadiums and Pioneer Square District. Okay. A car is certainly a way to access the waterfront. I highly encourage transit. We also have a protected bike lane, which all my friends that bike tell me how much they absolutely love it. It is a gorgeous ride. You are surrounded by landscaping, and it really takes you off of that beaten path. One of the things about the removal of the viaduct is you don't have the dirt and grime anymore. The sound is incredible. I mean, the change in sound, that's the thing that really hit me once the viaduct was gone. And also in terms of transportation, pedestrian access has been increased, and access for people who are living with disabilities. We have 4 different elevators that people can utilize throughout the corridor, because you do have some grade separation, particularly as you go north. So there's the Overlook Walk project where you can come down from the Pike Place Market.
I was going to say.
2 elevators right off of the market. There's one also at the the aquarium, and then we have one at Union Street as part of the Union Pet Bridge. If you are coming to access the ferries, which we have 10 million passengers that are going into Coleman Dock, maybe five of those are pedestrian, who knows, but you can come directly grade separated without having to cross traffic by going across our new Marion pedestrian bridge, which is also a really nice and safe way to get there.
It goes over the whole the whole area, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And where does it go? Does it go up onto Marion Street? Is that where it ends?
Straight along Marion Street to First Avenue.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, new rapid ride. So, so the other piece of this too is, especially for grand opening, I'm really excited to announce this. We, as people who live on a landlocked, island, we have ferry access, right? We typically go into Fauntleroy. Well, on this particular Saturday, many thanks to Metro, they are going to be providing a water taxi service. Especially on Saturday from 10 o'clock until 7:30.
Wow.
So you can get down to grand opening by using our water
taxi.
You'll
be right there.
It's going to put you right there at Pier 50.
Oh man. Fantastic.
We'll be on that boat with you.
Yes.
Before we kind of skip over it, my office was in Pioneer Square for 25 years, in the Maynard building and in the Grand Central building. I kind of lived through the controversy about removing the viaduct. Mm-hmm. And I was a big advocate for removing the viaduct, always was. And people would go, no, you can't remove the viaduct because you have such a beautiful view as you're driving down the viaduct. And I thought, that is one of the saddest things I have ever heard.
Yeah.
You know, your life is that hectic, that the only time you can take a look at the water and the Olympics is when you're peeking out of the corner of your eye and not crashing into the other cars, because there were narrow lanes for a lot of that viaduct. I thought, oh man, we're in trouble.
Yeah.
So when the viaduct finally came down, I was thrilled. I thought, that's such a great natural resource, you know, to have access to that beautiful and historic waterfront. I am curious, though, because there was a lot of parking right under the viaduct. Mm-hmm. What's the deal on parking now to get to the park? I assume it's different as you move up and down.
There is some street parking, but I would say it is limited. There are private parking garages around. Philanthropic partners, our private partners, Friends of the Waterfront, the nonprofit, they have created a website. Waterfrontparkseattle.org. And there's a whole site there on how to visit. And I know there are links to, you can obtain your parking now before you go downtown. You know, generally, I'm going to be there around 11 o'clock and they'll give you a half an hour to come in, and you can put a number of hours there, and you can actually save quite a bit of money by pre-planning your parking. I'd recommend that. But we also have a number of parking maps. The city of Seattle has a parking map, so I'd recommend looking for SDOT interactive maps and look for parking. And then we have what's called the Seattle Accessible Route Planner, which is another interactive map that will show when people need ADA parking. We have a number of stalls that are specifically available for them.
And that being interactive, is it current, showing you the current situation, or?
Not the current situation, but it shows you where they are.
Okay.
I think there are some maps that do show you the current or can potentially
capacities kind of
stuff. Show you some capacities.
Okay.
So let me follow up sort of two questions, one for you, Emily, one for you, Nicole. Emily, how did you work with the sort of established historic businesses along the waterfront to preserve that economic viability during this transition? I mean, it's been almost a 10-year transition, if you will, with the digging of the tunnel. I mean, the viaduct came down. There was, 3 or 4 years before it was sort of accessible, if you will. So how did that go? And then, Nicole, how do you tell that story of the historic waterfront and what it is today and connect the two? So sort of two questions.
So I would say anytime you have these major capital programs in front of businesses, it's incredibly challenging. And making sure that they are part of the solution is huge. We're going to talk about, I think, funding at some point today. Mm-hmm. But there is a local improvement district wherein there's a downtown core, and they pay additional funds as part of their property taxes to be in this area, and that helped build some of the aspects of the waterfront. So it is really making sure that you are a community and making sure that those businesses are part of the solution. So one of the pieces of this is a seawall. I mean, you can imagine. So there are all these pier owners that you have to figure out, how are we going to replace a major block of infrastructure in between the land and the piers that are on pilings, right? And so it's bridging and making sure there's continued access to these businesses. And they are all, at this point, very successful, and I think very much a part of celebrating. And they will be there celebrating these major accomplishments on Saturday.
Yeah, you know, I remember the old curiosity shop, and I drove by just recently, and I thought, oh gosh, is it still there? It looks like it's moved a bit.
Yes, but, they moved it just further west further. On Pier 54.
Yeah, that's what I thought. But it's still there, right? So
it's still there, going strong.
That is fantastic. And the question you had for her?
How are you going to tell this story? No, just in terms of informational signs, in terms of online, in terms of are there going to be interpretive tours? I mean, all of that kind of stuff. How are people going to understand what the significance of the changes are from the little crossing over place to a major industrial sort of hub to what it is today?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll give the long version of that first. So we started with the interpretive planning on the waterfront main corridor with Jennifer Ott from History Link, mm-hmm. Walking Encyclopedia of Seattle History. Mm-hmm. She's such a star. That project then expanded to the Pioneer Square East-West improvements. So that gave us another opportunity to then bring that story to talk about the Flounder Lagoon and talk about Zitzelalich. And I can explain that a little bit more because it answers your first question best. This work has now extended to the roof of the aquarium. We have a whole new set of interpretive signage going into Pike Place Market next month. We are working with the port to bring the storytelling all the way up to the new Elliott Bay Connections project. Mm. So with all of that real estate, you'll have this multi-mile interpretive experience that you can take. And as Emily said, we're working on getting all of that physical storytelling onto the website so that there is a way to access it, not just to access it when you're not on site, but also for accessibility, to be able to translate, to be able to have audio support. So to answer your first question, the Pioneer Square project that we did, which is installed, you can go see it right now. The main pieces are on Washington, leading up to the Washington Street boat landing. Mm-hmm. With the viaduct down, it is the most glorious view of the water. And on Maine. So we worked with the local landscape architect, MIG, and with the city, different city partners. But we were able to interpret where the original sea line, where the sea shoreline was in Pioneer Square, both where about First Avenue is. It actually lands in an alleyway that we've renamed Shoreline Alley.
Oh.
So you'll see that's the wave great. Patterns in the ground. On either end of the wave patterns, we've got interpretive signage. And then along with that, the landscaping kick rails also have etched storytelling in them. So the approach there was to take indigenous plant technologies, because the way that they used native plants and turned them into tools, turned them into, you know, hunting tools, baskets, ways to farm clams, it's all very rich and still current technology that we wanted to make sure was told. So we worked with Valerie Segris. She's Muckleshoot. She helped us put the right stories in the right places. So we talk about the Flounder Lagoon, and we connect the Flounder Lagoon to the technologies of using ocean spray or ironwood and creating the flounder spears. And then with that more historic technology, we had illustrations created by a Tacoma indigenous artist, Paige Pettibon, who illustrated these scenes for us, but in a contemporary way. So when you see these when you see the scene of the flounder hunting, it looks like it could be, it would be today, you know, up-to-date clothing, people of all ages, but also specifically, you know, indigenous people of today.
And the Flounders Bay, that was pretty much the northern part of that estuary.
It was occidental.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay, mm-hmm. That's kind of what I thought. Yeah. So we've been talking about the ferry dock and how much access there is to that. I know that it was affected a little bit during the construction, but how is it now? Has that affected the access? Has it improved it or...
Well, I would say, you know, definitely with that Marion Pedd Bridge, you probably saw we had a temporary pedestrian bridge that went along Columbia. Uh-huh. All of that has been adapted, right? Pier 50 has been completely rebuilt. Coleman Dock has been completely rebuilt. And if you haven't gone down there, it is really a stunning ferry terminal with some incredible art installations. Mm. Very, very immersive experience. You would come mostly from the south. There's two lanes that come from the south that turn off of Yesler into the dock. And then there's direct access for bicycles as well through that area and motorcycles.
Excellent. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned funding earlier, and I can tell you just I used to travel to Denver quite a bit, and we stayed at the Oxford Hotel, which was the old hotel right at the train line. So you're right in downtown. And when Coors Field went in, it was totally transformative. So I can imagine what you're anticipating, right, as we do this grand opening. But I'm curious about the funding, and you mentioned a local improvement district. Are there other folks who are stepping in with that?
Yeah, you bet. So we have philanthropy that has contributed $110 million.
Whoa.
City funding is at $320 million. The local improvement district, $160 million. And then state funding came in at $216 million. And that does not include the seawall, but that totals up $806
million. Wow. That is amazing.
It takes a village.
It definitely does. My gosh. Well, speaking of all of this funding is going to be, there's got to be a bunch of dignitaries. How about the ribbon cutting ceremony? Who all are you going to have?
I don't know everybody that's going to show up, but I can imagine that it's going to be a long list of public and private, parties. But I can tell you who's going to speak. So our ribbon cutting is going to be at 10 a.m. on Saturday morning on Pier 58. We are going to hear remarks from Muckleshoot Indian Tribe Representative, Suquamish Tribe Chairman Leonard Forsman. Mm. Our mayor, Bruce Harrell, is going to speak. Our former governor, Christine Gregoire, who really helped, I think, with the decision around the removal of the viaduct. Mm-hmm. Friends of the Waterfront Park, president and CEO, Joy Shizaki. And then finally, my boss, who I just adore, the Office of the Waterfront Civic Projects and Sound Transit Director, Angela Brady.
Fantastic.
I'm curious, the opening ceremonies, where exactly are they going to be?
Pier 58.
Pier 58.
Which we recently opened. And if you've gone down there or if you've seen pictures, it's the one that has the giant 25-foot jellyfish play structure.
Yeah.
You cannot miss it.
So it's just north of the wheel, the big wheel, right?
Exactly, around Union.
Mm-hmm. And how big a crowd can that support?
I wish I knew the full numbers on that pier itself. I don't.
I didn't mean literally support.
But I can't tell you the entirety of the corridor. We had torchlight parade there about a month ago, and there was about 300,000 people. So it's
300,000.
Uh-huh. And again, this is 20 acres of park space.
So, but is that 20 acres just the pier?
No, that's the entirety. That's the entirety of the space.
Yeah. Okay.
You mentioned, I think, an answer to a question Truman asked about trying to maintain the retail spaces that were down there. Are there any new retail spaces that are built into this?
There's pop-up programming Thursdays through, I believe, is it Saturdays or Sundays? Yeah, so we've got pop up a lot of local and BIPOC and Indigenous artists, and it's like I said, it's very much alive. There's a lot of opportunity for economics, not just for our major retailers, but our smaller small businesses.
So cool. This should be like a fair kind of situation.
You can't see Truman. He's making a circle. Yeah. I would say more of a line.
Oh, okay. Yeah. A line
of vendors that goes down the promenade. The promenade is very, very wide.
Yeah, I saw that.
100, max is about 120 feet, I think, right. Wide in some places.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
20 foot fire lane.
Yeah.
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 Well, I have to tell you that I had not been down there for, well, since this whole project started. And I happened to go to North Seattle, and I came back, and you know, used to be able to join the viaduct and go whizzing through. So I came up and I thought, oh, how am I going to do this? Well, it's very clear, and Alaska Way is fabulous. But I was amazed at how beautiful the whole area is through there. But after I got back about a week later, I got a bill for going through. You know, I said, are they charging to drive down that? I could not believe it. I thought, what is this? Well, then I realized, of course, my cousin had borrowed my car and driven through the tunnel.
Oh.
And so so I just want to reiterate that it is not does not cost you to drive down Alaska Way. You can drive the whole waterfront for free.
And so many of the events, I mean, all of the events on Saturday and many of the events that our partners, Friends of the Waterfront Park, puts on are all free.
Oh, they are. Okay,
yeah, there's good. A lot of incredible free events from Tai Chi to talks. There's free historic talks that you can become a part of. And that's all on their website to sign up. There's a lot of opportunities.
And part of that are these walking tours that David Williams and Jennifer Ott have been giving even before any of the interpretive signage has gone in. Mm-hmm. And sort of, it's amazing. Telling the stories as the waterfront was evolving, which now with it in place would just be a wonderful experience if you get the chance. And those are free and sponsored by Friends of Waterfront Park.
Wow.
And how do you find out about those? And or is there a schedule or are they online?
They have an event schedule online. Okay. And you'll see if you're down at, I think at the moment, Pier 62, mm-hmm. they do also have large posters with their calendar of events for at least, I think, the next month or two. Mm-hmm.
And the website is?
waterfrontparkseattle.org.
All Waterfront Park Seattle, all one word, right? Okay, great.
Wow, okay.
I'm interested, too. I mean, because it was a little crossing over place, it was a gathering place for Indigenous people all over the center of Puget Sound. And you basically have three tribal groups that have some claim to that area, if you will. Certainly the Squamish and Chief Seattle, the Duwamish, which is not a recognized tribe at this point, but seeking recognition, and the Muckleshoots. Could you talk a little bit about navigating that sort of minefield, if you will?
Yeah. I would say Jennifer Ott was our real star because she has such close connections with all of the tribes. And she was able to help us because when we were initially developing the interpretive content, we insisted that we needed to have an advisory group that helped us along the way. You know, we had worked with Jennifer and some of her connections. So she was always going to Leonard Forsman for advice, Warren King George. We had Valerie Segrest with helping us with a lot of the work. We have quotes directly from her throughout the waterfront, which are beautiful. But really, you know, getting FaceTime with them and being able to share a draft and craft that content and get feedback from both the Suquamish and the Muckleshoot really helped us hone in the story so that it didn't sound like it was coming from the settler mentality, which is really what inspired us. Valerie played a huge role in inspiring us to take that, especially this Pioneer Square storytelling, and bring it into the future because it's their history is actually something that they live every day. I would say the storytelling up on the Overlook Walk is also that was done by Valerie. And it's all about the inspiration of the native plants and actually highlights plantings that are up there.
So these are live plantings that are there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Live plantings. And we highlight those species that are really important to indigenous, the local indigenous tribes.
Wow.
Yeah, it's an important element of it, too. I mean, many people think Native people were here and then they were gone. And they, you know, they're still here. They're still part of the culture. And that sort of connection of pre-contact with, you know, the sort of displacement of contact and yet the maintenance of those cultures. That's an important part of what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. And there was a lot. I think the city did a great job with the public art. Mm-hmm. So many of the public art pieces that some are in, some are to be installed, where they really engaged local tribal members, and actually, I think even further afield.
And, you know, Emily, I just on funding, I know that in the past, well, when I was with the Park District, funding required 10%. 10% of the funding had to be for art. Is that correct?
1%.
Is it 1%?
1% for art.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So no matter what project, it's.
Yeah, and we have 16. Public art installations, publicly cited art installations on the projects that we've worked on, and that also includes WashDOT, mm-hmm. as well as the port. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, not the port. I'm not including the Port of Seattle, but the ferries, mm-hmm. With them, and then Pier 50 with King County Metro.
Okay. And 1% of $800 million is not an insignificant number, yeah, you know, and so that's really encouraging.
I think that's what allowed some of these pieces to stretch blocks along the promenade. And they just really craft and shape your experience down there.
That's great.
Awesome. Amazing infrastructure for people to check out. Is it all pretty much City of Seattle who's going to keep from here forward, kind of keeping everything pulled together? Or are there other entities that help with the funding and maintenance?
Yeah, well, it does. I mentioned earlier, I love this idea of it takes a village. Like, so what are some of the best installations? And we did look far and beyond in what models were being very successful, like the Highline in New York. And so with this model, we have the Friends of Waterfront Park who will be helping with programming and activation. You know, there's some cleaning, some maintenance. But our big partner is Seattle Center, who has the waterfront park operations. And they make sure, you know, that you have a clean and welcoming experience. We have emergency services unit officers that are there in the park, and they are trained, and we have partners that are help trained at sort of which escalation levels based upon different activities that might occur. So that's a big thing that's embedded in making sure that people feel comfortable and that it's a safe space for people to come and visit.
So just to be clear, you said that it's Vashon, the Seattle Center organization that is managing the facility.
Yeah, and the Department of Transportation it takes care of the roadway and the protected bike lane.
Sure.
And we have dedicated funding for maintenance, which I got to tell you, please forgive me, but maintenance needs to be sexy. It is so incredibly important. We often, the public, build projects and we walk away. This is not the case for this particular project.
Right.
We have funding from our municipal park district. We have funding from our real estate excise tax as well as a commercial parking tax that goes into to make sure that our assets are being well cared for.
Good. Sounds like Disneyland. I mean, not like Disneyland, but like Walt Disney said when he was going to make this park, and people told him, "Oh, those amusement parks are dirty," and he said, "Not my park."
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
So,
you got any more?
No.
Okay, so go ahead.
Oh, I just had a quick question that sort of has. So I have a quick question about, you talked earlier about story maps. And sort of, how is that going to work in terms of, are they going to be all online? Are they going to be accessible? How's that going to work?
They'll all be online. This week, we're going to be rolling out our art interpretive story map, which will show those 17 different art pieces, their location, and you can interact with all those pieces, and there'll be links for more information, etc. And then our interpretive cultural story map will be released, you know, hopefully in the next couple months, and will also be available on our websites and well-publicized. And that one's going to be, I'm very excited about this one. It's going to be incredible, an immersive experience that really helps to tell these stories.
And some of the signs that are already installed that accompany the handrail stories, so along the wooden handrail that faces the water, there are QR codes that you can use to get directly to the city's waterfront park.
Okay, so you're going to be tracking the water taxi bump in usage, right, as people go check all this out?
Yes.
Firsthand.
Well, I can tell you this. I am thrilled that you folks are here today. This is really, really, really interesting, and I can't wait to see how this evolves over time, because I know it's just going to get better and better and better. And for anyone who hasn't been down to the waterfront, I highly recommend, and particularly if you can come down for the grand opening, which is the 6th.
There's over 100 different acts and experiences and storytelling, and it's going to be interactive art.
All day long.
It's going to be really amazing.
All day long. Oh, one really quick question. Music venues, are there several, are there different music venues?
Yes, we have Pier 58, Pier 62, Overlook Walk, the Park Promenade, and I know we don't have time to list them all, so I'm really just going to encourage folks to go out and Google or go to the websites that we've given earlier to see all the acts, because it's huge.
Or if you subscribe to the Seattle Times, they had an insert this weekend that gives
it tells
you a
whole thing. Okay. Bruce, who do we have next week?
Oh, next week we're going to have Theron Shaw, who is a new executive director of the Land Trust, and he's going to talk about sort of his vision for the Land Trust and what they've done in the past and what he sees happening in the future. So it should be a great show.
Great, great. Well, Emily, Nicole, thank you very, very much for coming in. We're just thrilled to have you. And for Bruce, Craig, Kevin and myself, we'd thank you all for listening, and we look forward to talking with you next week.
Thank you for having us, Truman.
You bet.
Thank you so much.